Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not, is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch. In a week when the Chinese Olympic Committee became increasingly concerned for the welfare of Donny van de Beek, despite the release of video purporting to show him playing for the English football club Manchester United in a game at Watford. Van de Beek is clearly not happy, they said, and we believe this footage to be a lie. If you look at the players around him, they are clearly not professionals. See how baffled they look. Also, they cannot kick. We believe them to be actors. The goalkeeper is obviously the man from Wolverine.
And it was a week in which it was announced that the Brit Awards are scrapping their male and female categories, which means that apparently Adele and Ed Sheeran are going head to head. It's going to be on Sky Box Office at 2 in the morning, and I think she's going to finish him, which would be bad news for Ipswich Town because he sponsors their shirts. It was interesting to speculate about the outcome of a potential fight on the undercard between Jurgen Klopp and Mikel Arteta after their mid-match slap fest on Saturday. Experts are saying the Liverpool boss has the height and reach advantage, but Arteta has kung fu grip.
Now, after what was described as an unusual but extremely productive talk with Prime Minister Boris Johnson, FIFA have identified their favoured venue for the 2030 World Cup, much to the delight of the FA of Peppa Pig World.
It's bizarre, isn't it, to think of him visiting Peppa Pig World? I think he only went because he thought there'd be a trough he could get his snout in. He said, apparently, who'd have believed that a pig that looks like a hairdryer could be an international success? To which Pepper replied, who'd have believed that a pig that looks like it's been attacked by a hairdryer could be Prime Minister? Now, it's now less than a year to go to the Qatar World Cup. We're supposed to be excited about this, aren't we? But if it wasn't in stupid Qatar, it would be in June, so it would only be 7 months away. Did you see David Beckham at the Qatar Grand Prix?
I did, and John Terry.
Yeah, and Gianni Infantino holding the World Cup.
Yes.
And, you know, Bex is there. That's 15 million quid's worth of ambassadoring right there, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes.
He could put his feet up for the rest
money
of the
well
year.
Earned.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Other footballers showed up, didn't they, for a promotional kickabout, including, as you say, John Terry, Marcel Desailly, Patrick Kluivert, and Andrea Pirlo, the Italian Calvin Phillips. Did you see, by the way, that Qatar arrested two Norwegian journalists and erased the footage they'd taken of migrant workers being mistreated?
Yeah.
It seems like the World Cup could do with a Norwegian ambassador. I wonder if anyone's available.
Absolutely. Well, I did think, you know, that's a dangerous precedent because once we get to the World Cup, there's going to be so many journalists there, they're just not going to know what to do. I think what they should do is just arrest one and make them an example to the rest. And I'm going to suggest Danny Murphy.
Well... Anyway, before we encase ourselves in the sumptuous velvet accoutrements of the Premier League, as George Costanza would do if only it were socially acceptable, let us first don the hair shirt of penitence for whatever it is that karma is punishing us for and take a squint at the very bottom of the EFL. Last Saturday, my team, Oldham Athletic, finally managed the grandstand finish that has been eluding us in recent months against Port Vale. We were, as usual, 2-1 down with 9 minutes to go. But this time, we somehow managed to get the ball into the opposition area without two or three of their players going down, claiming some sort of head injury. And our left back smashed in an equaliser. Better still, in the 3rd minute of injury time, he almost repeated the feat, only to have a Vale defender launch it into the top corner with a diving header own goal. Absolutely glorious thing. There are some great ways, aren't there, to score an own goal. You don't want to just deflect it in off your knee or something like that and then be given responsibility for it. Did you see the own goal that Stockport centre-half scored for Bolton in that really exciting FA Cup game last week? There's the kind of swing and a miss that scuffed in off his standing foot. That's a classic, obviously. But the diving header own goal, that's the best, I think.
Yeah. In fact, own goals should only count if they're like that. It should be only dead good own goals. Headers and volleys count.
Yeah, everything else should just be disallowed out of pity.
Absolutely.
But Oldham fans still talk about a diving header own goal that Bobby Moore scored for us when he was playing for Fulham in 74, 75 or thereabouts. Like a bullet it was into the top corner. Absolutely unstoppable. And yet, he was never knighted. Disgrace. Other highlights of Saturday included returning mascot Chaddy the Owl clapping along with chants against the owners. So he's not going to last very long if he carries on like that. And
how would you know if a mascot has been replaced?
How would you
know? It's impossible to know.
Well, no, exactly. The original in contents of Chaddy the Owl would be in a gulag somewhere.
Yes.
But Jamie Hopcutt, a player, finally coming back from an injury he picked up on his debut back in August. So he's like a new player. The commentator on the Oldham coverage said this: people will remember him from his time at Ostersunds. What sort of a thing is that to say to the most parochial imaginable audience? Who's following Oldham and Ostersunds?
Well, you know,
Vowel fans.
Graham Potter's ex-club, of course.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe Graham Potter's following them.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, on Tuesday night at Northampton, Latics reverted to form, which in our case is trying to feel encouraged because we only lost 2-1 for the third time in 4 games. Even so, Keith Curls Oldham sat proudly on top of the mini league of Keiths, ahead of Keith Millen's Carlisle and Keith Hill's Scunthorpe, and no one else. Stevenage, the next team up, are yet to appoint a Keith and have actually been flirting with a Steve Evans of Gillingham, who may be flirting back. It's hard to tell. He might just be fluttering his eyelashes because he got too much guyliner on them. But then yesterday, Keith Curl was sacked by mutual consent. By mutual consent, don't you?
Sorry, how does that work?
Exactly. It's like, get the hell out of here. I'm going. I'm not stopping around here. Yes, get out.
Sack me, please. Sack me, please.
Anyway, but it means we lose our top Keith status, which is the closest we've come to a trophy for 30 years. We have an interim head coach now, very much on trend, very much very modern. Salim Benashour has moved up from the academy for Saturday, so we shall see if we get a Benashour bounce, shan't we?
Well, I would hope that you would do.
Yeah. Anyway, let's start with, after our chat last week, with Mark Gregory.
Mark Gregory.
The finances of the game. It's interesting to see that the government's fan-led review, chaired by MP Tracy Crouch, has now delivered its 47 recommendations. God, the game's fucked, isn't it?
I know.
47
it really is.
Recommendations.
Did you see, I don't know whether you saw the picture on the BBC website that accompanied the uh-huh. revelations about the new football ombudsman, as I like to think of them.
Ombudsperson.
And it's a bloke outside Chelsea with a banner that says, "Football belongs to us, not you." And you know what? That's exactly the problem, because that's the fucking opposite of what's happened. It belongs to them, not us. Football belongs to you.
Here's my banner. I spent ages making it. Anyway, the recommendations include setting up an independent regulator for football to prevent it lurching from crisis to crisis. You know, that was basically Mark's point as well. And, you know, the same caveats apply to, as we were saying last week, you know, you set up an independent regulator, but who the hell is it and what sort of teeth do they have?
Absolutely, absolutely.
But anyway, there's measures to stop clubs joining breakaway leagues.
Yep.
Set up after the ESL fiasco and other total disasters like the ones at Bury and Derby and Reading. And Macclesfield, the documentary with Robbie Savage.
Yes, which is horrible. I mean, you've got to imagine as a Macclesfield fan, you're thinking, how could it get any... Oh, Robbie Savage is taking over. Oh, no, wait, it just did. It just did. The funny thing I threw up, you know, when they're trying to bring in Operation Big Picture, which was the big parry thing, was the immediate reaction from the Big Six was, you can't just drop something like this on us without any warning. And you're thinking, and this was literally 2 weeks after the European Super League thing happened.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are other things. Of course, there's a scheme involved that Tracy Crouch is suggesting setting up to oblige owners to pass an integrity check showing they're of good character, which apparently does more than the toothless current owners and directors test. Something called a golden share for supporters that would theoretically at least give fans a say on heritage issues. It feels like legacy fans, doesn't it? Heritage issues.
Yeah.
Things like moving to a new stadium or changing the colour of the shirts like they did at Cardiff that time.
Yeah.
But the most interesting stuff, I think, goes into the areas that we were talking about with Mark last week in his book, basically trying to change the financial balance of the game so that the billions that are flooding in support the whole pyramid. And
yeah.
There's a proposal along those lines to reform parachute payments, which was the thing that Mark was talking about. But the one that I haven't heard floated before, I guess, is this idea of a 10% levy on transfer fees paid by EPL clubs to other EPL clubs or to foreign clubs. And over the last 5 years, apparently, this would have provided something like 160 million for redistribution lower down and blah, blah, blah. And they're calling it stamp duty so that rich people can understand
what it means.
But what this does, I think, I mean, is it does at least get at the riches of football's elite at the point where it's leaving the clubs, you know, at the point where it's being spent, you know. And if this had the effect, I don't know if it will, if it had the effect of reducing agents' fees as well, so much the better, you know.
Well, but the thing about that is, that is such an easy thing for them to work out a way to go around. All they'll do is not pay a transfer fee. They'll do something different through someone else and via place and that place. It's just ridiculous. The idea that, you know, somebody like the Glazers or John Henry at Liverpool, these people have no feel for all of this stuff. They will look at it and go, well, yeah, we could do all of that or not. And so the answer is not.
Well, what Tracy Crouch says was, you know, she's keen to stress that these recommendations are not a menu to pick and choose from. They're all part of an interconnected plan. And the clubs immediately said, well, we'll look at those and we'll talk to the EFL and the FSA and then we'll pick and choose which ones we want to agree to.
Exactly. And it reminds me, talking about not having a real feel for what football is about. When Franz Beckenbauer signed for the New York Cosmos, and he made his debut, and the owner of New York Cosmos went down to the changing room at half time and said, and I quote, "Tell the Kraut to get his ass up front. We don't pay $1 million for some guy to hang around in defence." Well, I think that tells us something about, not all Americans, but a lot of Americans. Yeah. Do you remember when we were in France, we met I'm a really big football fan, American supporter.
USA-Iran game.
Yeah, who was bemoaning the fact that they hadn't won because they'd had terrible bad luck. Do you remember what he said?
Yeah, I remember he said, "We should have won that game. We had four pole shots."
Four pole shots. That's where we're going.
Four pole shots.
Pole shots are coming.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's fine, I think, as we said last week, to have an independent regulator in theory, but who's it going to be? You know, what sort of weight would they actually
be? It's going to be Rick Parry, isn't it? Because he's so desperate to get back in some sort of important role in football. He reminds me a little bit of Alan Partridge touting his game show ideas to all the channels. He's like, "No, please let me be involved." Yeah. Here's one. And talking of
monkey
which,
tennis.
Yeah. And talking of which, by the way, what about this? This is an idea I had during the week. Okay, it's basically Deal or No Deal, right?
Yeah.
Only half of the boxes have dangerous predator animals inside them. And if you open one of those, it's allowed to just wander around the studio taking anybody it wants.
Yeah.
Do you think? I think it'll work.
I don't see why that wouldn't work.
Well, I can't see either.
Exactly. We should put it to the banker, somebody says. Or the zookeeper, as it might be. Yeah. I mean, you read all these recommendations, which all sound great, you know, as recommendations often do, but that's all they are. And the kicker is in the last line of the story in the paper. The FSA, Football Supporters Association Chief Executive Kevin Miles, said the review is potentially a huge step forward for football governance, but that it's now up to the government to deliver. And the government response was, football is an international success story, much like Peppa Pig. Beep, beep, that's what my car sounds like. Is everything okay? Well, of course it's okay. We'll write these recommendations on the side of a bus. That's what we'll do.
The terrible and fundamental truth of the matter is that football fans can affect the clubs but they will not, because the way to affect the clubs is to not go to the games. No, seriously, though, it is. And they will never do that. That never happens. You never get a boycott. You get sort of, I mean, even at Manchester United, you know, you've got a few that went off and formed FC United and things like that. But the truth of the matter is that by effectively not going, that would make a difference, but that will never, ever happen.
They like
and
it
they
too much.
Know
it's
that,
trouble.
And they know it.
Well, that's the thing all over, isn't it? The clubs just take advantage of that captive audience that they have. I mean, at Oldham, there have been stay-away protests all this season. And last week, they decided to change tack and went for a thing called Pack the Park. Let's have as many people there as possible to protest.
That'll show them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, give them more money.
They're all singing. Chaddy the Elves clapping along on his last day with a job. Anyway, last weekend in the Premier League was the start of a number of new eras, and perhaps we have a large enough sample to evaluate the phenomenon of the new manager bounce, which would be handy.
Well, yeah, because it's
on.
2 out of 2, I think.
Well, there was Eddie Howe, not Ernie Howe. He missed the first Newcastle game of the Eddie Howe era, didn't he, with COVID. So it was Jason Tindall doing the press after, and it felt like they were still really in a sort of caretaker situation.
Yeah, and it felt to me very much like the first day at school when my son would pretend he was ill and not go in for the first week. He was just frit. Wasn't he?
He didn't want to sit next to Amanda Staveley again.
Who would, quite frankly?
Exactly. Now, Jamal Lascelles scored at both ends. The own goal was just a deflection off his shin, not a full diving header.
No point in that.
But they got a 3-3 with Brentford, which was a good game. Not bad, but not enough to keep them off the bottom. Not enough to end their long winless run, but who knows what's going to happen there. Bottom of the table was vacated, wasn't it, by Norwich City after their new manager Dean Smith kicked off with a win. It must be really strange for him to be facing Southampton as Norwich manager 2 weeks after facing them as Villa boss and then getting sacked.
And that was amazing, I thought, the speed at which he was able to be installed as the new manager, given that he was actually managing another club, 10 days before?
Against the same opposition.
Against the same opposition.
It was just absurd.
My favourite game of last weekend, and I must be naive, I'd never thought about this, but do you know that the Vatican have a football team?
No.
I didn't know this. And of course, why wouldn't they? You know, it's a place of work. And I'm hoping that they just play against other denominations. So, you know.
Oh, like in that old Charlie Williams joke about the Catholics against the rabbis, you remember that?
Possibly, but I'm not going to go there. No, I was thinking more of the Russian Orthodox Church or the Moonies, I was thinking. Yeah. Anyway, so on Sunday, they played at Lazio's training ground against the World Roma Organization, which opens up a whole can of worms about the Lazio Roma thing, but as you know, it's really hard to get a referee for friendlies. So the Pope, and I mean this, the Pope, the Pope contacted directly somebody to referee. He asked Ciro Immobile to come and referee the game, and he did, and it was a 7-7 draw, which I think shows something about the generosity of the church, quite honestly. But if you found somebody,
do you think it was a little bit after you, Claude?
Yes, a little bit of that. I think it was a lot of that. If you found him, you didn't just get a free kick. You also had to confess that you had done the thing, and you had to
two Hail Marys and 10 press-ups.
Yeah, do penance. So that's presumably why it was such a high scoring game.
Yeah, cool. Well, at the weekend, Antonio Conte showcased his over-the-top body language and entire facial range, which goes from calm disbelief to furious disbelief, on the touchline at White Hart Lane. Spurs had a dreadful first half, didn't they, against Leeds, and then their sixth straight half without a shot on target, apparently. And the second half was better, they turned it around. He did the prodigal son thing, which Dean Smith did as well, didn't he? Brought on Billy Gilmore, who had been sidelined since September and
who
was playing
really well for
Scotland, and Todd Cantwell, and apparently they'd not been playing. Yeah. And he brought them back in and they did really well. And Conte brought on Dele Alli, didn't he, despite him having a selection of Haribo worms on his head.
Yes, that was a very strange look, I have to say.
And then there was Steven Gerrard. He started with a win at Villa, 2-0 over Brighton. He started to stamp his authority, hasn't he, banning tomato ketchup and fizzy drinks and all sauces and puddings. This is the sort of thing you can only really do, I think, if you've started with a win and people think there's something you're going to buy into.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it feels like a punishment, doesn't it? I mean, a word of warning, you know, according to Steve McLaren, Ronaldo's influence on the team at Man United extends to players not having puddings anymore because he doesn't, and no puddings leads to manager being sacked.
But the really interesting thing I found about the Gerrard and the tomato ketchup is that Conte did exactly the same thing at Spurs.
Yes, he did.
He came in and he said, no, there is to be no tomato ketchup. And you just wonder, are there two sorts of managers? One's that approve of tomato ketchup and one's that don't. And also, do you start losing the dressing room when little sachets appear there and everywhere?
What? Who's brought this in? Oh, I don't know.
It reminded me of a story that Benoit Assou-Ekotto told me. Would you believe, of all people, on his way to the game, he used to go to the game on the tube. Well, the home games, obviously.
Yeah,
it'd be ridiculous to go to Sunderland on
the
tube.
Well, he only played in London derbies.
So he used to buy a Big Mac before getting on the tube. He would smuggle it into the ground, and just before kickoff, he'd go into the physio's room where there was a what do you call that thing where you cook? How old am I?
The microwave.
Microwave, that's it, microwave. It's called, and he used to pop it in the microwave and eat a Big Mac and then go out and play, which is...
That explains a thing or two.
Oh, it does, yeah.
But you wonder whether there's anything in it nutritionally. Apparently a sachet of ketchup is 10 calories. It has no physiological effect at all. It's a psychological thing. It's stamping authority or giving the impression that you've come in, like Conte and like Steven Gerrard, and you've seen immediately why everything's been going wrong. It's the ketchup.
Well, and do you know that Roy Hodgson replaced Capello, didn't he? Mm. Roy Hodgson, Capello again had banned the England team from using tomato ketchup. This is just a whole new world I knew nothing about. And Roy Hodgson brought it back in as his first act as England manager. And it makes you think that the PFA must spend an awful lot of time lobbying clubs on behalf of players purely about tomato ketchup.
Yeah, I mean, I think it must just mean it's nothing to do with anything apart from, you know, making the players feel subliminally that problems are being solved. You know, there's no ketchup now. That means we're on the right track. You know, anyway, the big story at the weekend was United getting thumped 4-1 at Watford. And it could have been worse, couldn't it? You know, De Gea saved a penalty twice and a follow-up goal was chalked off by VAR before there was even any scoring. Maguire was sent off. Funnily enough, didn't cup his ears to his critics as he walked off. And afterwards, De Gea said the players didn't know what they were doing, didn't know what to do with the ball, which is pretty damning, isn't it about the coaching at Old Trafford? Because that's the basic thing.
Yeah, that's a big criticism, you've got to say. The front page of The Observer said, which I thought was just about the most inaccurate thing you could ever say. It said, abject United thrash to leave Solskjaer's future uncertain.
Oh,
No. Quite the opposite, oh, I think, dear friends.
I mean, he had a great start there, didn't he? When he himself was an interim coach.
They're
talking about replacing him with an interim caretaker and then an interim manager. I mean, it's an odd way of going about things. I mean, them talking about appointing an interim boss seemed to me at first like an open letter to Sir Alex Ferguson. You know, just do it to the end of the season. Then we'll find someone honest. I mean, of course, he's 79 and has had health issues and stuff, but the hairdryer might still work. You never know.
Absolutely. Did you see that Legoland in Manchester, where they've got an Old Trafford, a Lego Old Trafford, obviously, with more atmosphere, clearly, than the... Anyway, that doesn't matter. A little Legoland Old Trafford. And they've put now this week a little Lego Solskjaer with a suitcase walking out of Old Trafford, and I'm really hoping that there's also a little taxi queue next to him with Mourinho, Van Gaal, Moyes and Giggs in it.
Well, just going off into the distance. Yeah,
and also, did you see that Sol Campbell had suggested that the best person to replace Solskjaer at United was Steve Bruce?
Well, again, wouldn't that be fantastic?
Yeah, you know, well, you can see his point from a sort of Arsenal and Tottenham point of view.
Well, you can see it from a United point of view as well, because you give Steve Bruce the job, he's going to be so happy, you can pay him whatever you want. He's just had a big payoff from Newcastle. It'd be like his dream come true, but he would have no expectation of staying beyond the end of the season.
No.
So, you know, that seems to me to be the tricky thing about appointing an interim coach, especially at the ones that they're looking at, include this list of names. Ralf Rangnick, who's a German managed Schalke and RB Leipzig, and was, like Klopp, was one of the innovators of the gegenpress. And this is what they all have in common, these people. They all manage teams that press.
Was it the gegenpress that Gutenberg used?
Initially, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
in
yeah,
in
yeah.
the 1600s.
I think Neil Pearson told me that, yeah. Right. Now, so we need to take a break there, and in a moment we're going to have our guest. Our guest today is a dyed-in-the-Woolwich Arsenal fan. I could list his many television and other credits, but frankly, we don't have the time. I can only say that he, like us, is passionate about the game of football and, like us, more than happy to share his views on the game with reckless abandon. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Alan Davies, especially as I know you have a ballet lesson pending, do you not?
Yes, well, it's my 10-year-old's ballet lesson. Yes, that is what's in my diary, this very moment.
Yeah. Do you never join in? No.
Well, when they were very little, I would have to get up.
You'd have to hold one hand.
Sometimes, yeah. And someone would hold a finger. And yeah. Actually, my mother-in-law once attended and said to my wife, "Alan's very good." I was literally just walking around.
Yeah. Yes, and you clearly treasure that, though. Is that the only kind word you've ever had?
It comes to mind immediately. Yeah.
And presumably, what she was saying was, wouldn't it be possible for him to give up all this silly comedy stuff? Because ballet's clearly his forte.
Yeah, there was a little element of finally. Something.
Finally,
yeah. Ah, now I can begin to see what you see in him.
It's a bit like Granit Xhaka against France. Oh, that's what you can do.
Yeah. He looked great in the Euros, didn't he?
Yeah, he looked great in the Euros.
Different player.
Yeah.
Now, we'll start with Arsenal, Alan, obviously, because it's been a strange season. Literally, you were bottom about 6 weeks ago, and everybody was calling for... Well, not everybody.
Yeah,
a lot of people were calling for Arteta's ahead. And now, clearly, it's gone a bit better, although last weekend we got a bit of a drubbing. Does this feel like a new beginning? Because that's what all football fans want. If you're not actually winning anything, you're looking for the grassroots, aren't you, of a new beginning?
You are, yeah. I don't know how many false dawns you can have in a row before there's an actual dawn. But we did have a very good transfer
window. You're talking to a Stoke fan and an Oldham fan here. Excuse me, no dawns. There are no dawns.
All dawns are real dawns and they're the start of a shit day.
sorry. Yeah, go on.
We'd had not only no points but no goals. We'd had quite a difficult opposition, but we'd also played appallingly badly. And embarrassingly so, and people were very angry and upset, and myself included. And then we bought some really good players, and unusually for one or two players who come from other leagues, like Tomiyasu, for example, they settled in immediately and started playing very well and seemed to have the right character and attitude. We also were fortunate that we then played Norwich and Burnley, who were the bottom two at the time and even worse than us. And we scraped 1-0 wins against them and started winning some games. And then we smashed Tottenham at the Emirates just as Nuno was finally, his bloom was deflating. So that was an opportune moment. And that got the crowd on his side. And then we won a couple of more games and we felt like, yeah, well, here we go. And then we went to Anfield and just got beaten up by the bigger boys.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, Liverpool are in an extraordinary run of goal scoring at the moment.
I was watching that game at the weekend and I suddenly noticed, and I hadn't noticed, but it's been the case for a couple of years, but I suddenly noticed it was branded Saturday Night Football, which I guess has been back for a couple of seasons since they got that package back from BT. But in my head, I'm sitting watching it going, night football. You don't have to show it. And they do, of course, because they've paid so much for the rights. But I suddenly noticed that Arsenal had a player called Tavares.
Yeah.
And Tavares were in Saturday Night Fever.
It only takes a minute, girl.
Yeah. Well, they sang More Than a Woman, didn't they, on the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. Mm. But they were, in fact, the second most prominent group of harmonising brothers on that album. And the Tavares were all brothers. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Five brothers with the surname Tavares, which is, you know...
They're brothers. They're all going to have the surname Tavares.
Of course.
You say that as if that's a shock.
It was just a little bit of extra emphasis. But the interesting thing was, it's a gift of a name if you're an all-brother... singing group. And so when they started the family band, they thought, what should we call ourselves? And they went, I know, Chubby and the Turnpikes. We'll call ourselves that. But I find myself wondering, why doesn't Arteta put Tavares in charge of organising a defensive wall? Because that was their thing, they're all dressed the same, doing the box step and the thing. And that would be such a sort of great way of putting people off.
Well, then maybe that's something you can pass on to Mikel.
Yeah, off you go,
Alan.
I'm sure he's open to ideas from all quarters.
Yeah. Yeah.
From 70s disco.
When things weren't going so well and we were doing the podcast, I was looking at quite a lot of Arsenal message boards, which I have to say is not something I would normally do.
Nor I.
No, well, but what I found was an incredibly divided set of opinions. You know, see, I don't habitually read anybody's message boards apart from Stoke ones, but there seems to be an awful lot of conflict there. Of maybe it's just the anger from maybe the last couple of years of Wenger going on. Do you get that feeling in the ground or not?
Not so much in the ground, because there's a game going on, and that's really, people remember then what we're actually.
Is it
about.
Distracting? Yeah,
it's distracting from the rage. I think the debate over Arsene's departure was a bit like Brexit. It divided the support, and some would say permanently. Yeah. And now Emery was a decent guy, but couldn't speak any English, and people didn't play for him. Some of the players, Ozil's little clique, didn't play for him. He's shown since what a good coach he is again. Arteta suddenly was a very risky appointment. Never managed anywhere. Pep's number two isn't a qualification, which is evidenced by the fact that Pep's number two currently is never in the running for any job in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And he plainly was out of his depth, making mistakes, and it was very frustrating. But people wanted him to do well and didn't want to change and didn't want to throw somebody out who'd just been there. And there was some... because he played for the club and he was captain of the club, there was some loyalty to him from way back. So you wanted it to go well. But really, a lot of people are saying it's 2 years now and this is a shambles. We're eighth, but never mind that. We're not getting a shot on goal. It's all very risk-averse and dull. What we've lost is the spirit of Wenger's football as well as the success of it. So, very, very divided. He was really helped in August by the owners spending a lot of money and really helped.
Which has been that's been a big moan, hasn't it, for a long time.
A long time.
We're not prepared to spend the money.
But also the money's been spent, but badly. So we signed Torreira.
Podolski.
Well, I was thinking more recently. We signed Bernd Leno when we had Martinez, and we signed Socrates and we had centre backs, and we signed Torreira and we had Elneny. They're the same player. We signed Pepe for 72 million and not Grealish or Zaha. And so you could sort of rage at these mistakes. But Ramsdale's a really a fantastic signing. Everyone is extremely excited.
And White,
Ben White's really good. Gabriel's learned English, so he's much better. Kieran Tierney should have played instead of Tavares at the weekend. But of course, the real thrill and excitement about the boys coming from the youth team. So what with Saka and Smith Rowe, what we have, I have as a sort of old dinosaur fan, is more of a feeling of the George Graham era, where there was a crop of young players and a load of tough young defenders who were loyal to the manager brought in, and a plan to grow over 3 years. And I sort of feel as though actually Arteta's stumbled on something, and he might have taken him 2 years to work out what he was doing.
But I think you're right, though. I think that the form of Smith Rowe and Saka particularly has bought him a load more time, I think, just because there's a great...
Yeah, it has. And also I think it's given a little lift to Lacazette and Aubameyang, who really are infuriating players. You don't know whether they're going to turn up or not.
Yeah, and the other thing is, as a fan, if a player comes through from the youth team, one, you have a perception of them as having Arsenal in their heart, and secondly, you haven't paid any money for them, and so you're more likely to give them a chance. You know, when somebody comes in for an awful lot of money and doesn't seem to do anything at all, it's very easy to get cross with them much, much quicker.
Well, when this transfer tax comes in, this transfer levy comes in, that'll be even more pronounced, won't it? Because you'll be looking at the players who've come through the youth thing and think, well, at least we haven't given any money to the fucking pyramid.
I think going in at 10% on the transfer tax, it was perhaps where they've gone wrong. I mean, if they started at 1%, still would be a lot of money.
But they have said if there's there's another hit of COVID or any other sort of virus, they will suspend it for 6 months, like they did with stamp duty. So that's good of them. So the whole thing about you. So you're saying the Wenger thing was a bit like Brexit, which I can see actually, and that also would explain the lack of lorry drivers at the Emirates. We don't see many of them at the moment, but. you're just talking about the Arsenal way, and I'm always fascinated by that. There was a really good thing in The Observer a few weeks ago, where it must have been the beginning of the season, and they asked somebody from the fanzine, from each club or whatever, the supporters, and they asked them, how would you describe your club's philosophy or your way of playing? and I've always been, probably because I'm old enough to remember every team playing in a slightly different way than they do now, I'm kind of suspicious of that, the Arsenal way, the Liverpool way, the Manchester United way. And for many years, of course, the classic one was the West Ham way. Do you believe there to be, that's continued through all of your time supporting Arsenal, a strand that links one team with the next?
No, not really, because Wenger was a unique period.
Yeah,
Wenger had this 22-year period of all Wenger's management. It's so counterintuitive. It's really fascinating, and he certainly didn't devote much time to the opposition. It was all about relaxing his players so that they played as they did when they were children. And until it gets dark. Then they have to come in for their tea.
That would explain the nighttime games going so badly wrong.
That's right, they like to play. They play on a Sunday morning at 10.
And four quarters.
I remember we played Hull City in a memorable cup final in 2014, where Hull were 2-0 up and Arsenal were 2-2, and then it went to extra time. And then at half-time and extra time, penalties are looming. I think Hull were pretty dead on their feet and hoping for pens. And Wenger brought on Thomas Rosicki and Jack Wilshere and tried to win the game in the last 15 minutes. And that's what Wenger was like. When everything about you was saying, if we let one in now, we could lose this. It's going to pens, you know. And I remember I watched Southgate, who I admire greatly, in the Euro final. And he had this plan to bring on a couple of penalty kickers at the end. And I think he should have given them the last 15 minutes and tried to win it in that last period.
No, he should have tried to win it from the second minute after we'd scored the first goal, to tell you the honest truth. And I feel for Southgate
couldn't
too.
Couldn't get the ball off them, could he?
Well, no.
They were on their knees for the first 15 minutes, Italy. They didn't know what fucking day it was. And then England just backed off and let them and invited them into the game.
But we're going over old ground.
Well,
which
we are.
We've trodden
but
many,
it's going
many
to be, it's going to be new
times.
Ground as well. He's decided.
You know,
new contract,
in terms of the identity of the club, the thing that we've sustained that I like is that no one likes to play Arsenal. When you play Arsenal, it's Arsenal. And everyone hated us when George Graham was the manager, and they hated us because we wouldn't let you score. And then when Vieira and everybody were there, it was quite feisty, and there were a few scraps and some cards, and everyone hated that. And then we got so good that you couldn't get the ball of us, and everyone hated that. Yes. We were unbeaten for a year and a half. Mm. And we became a soft touch, and that was that.
People like that a lot better.
The Arsenal way
they
was.
Do, really.
Yeah, I know you did.
Actually, there's a story, and I may have told you this before, that that Tony Pulis told me that he was on a coaching course with Jens Lehmann, and you said that Wenger didn't really concentrate on the other team at all, but he'd become obsessed with the long throws that Stoke were chucking in, and was really hated them.
And our vulnerability to them,
yeah. So and Lehmann asked Pulis, he said it may have been Rory actually, or maybe it was Rory who was on the course. Anyway, well, he said, how much practice, how much of the training time do you put onto these long throws? And Rory said, well, we never practiced them at all. We don't practice them at all. I can throw it a long way. They know where to stand. There's no practicing. and Lehmann said, but before we used to play you, we'd have to do 3 days of defending long throws. And they got some sort of a trebuchet that fires things.
Yes, catapult. Yeah.
Because they hadn't got anybody who could throw it far enough, which did kind of make me laugh a little bit. And the other one I really wanted to ask you was the fine player, Stepanov.
Yes.
Do you know this? You know the Stepanov story, do you?
Yes. Yeah. Well, all the good players told Wenger how difficult he was to
play against, because they were winding up Martin Keown and saying, "You're never going to get in the side, Martin. If we signed him, you'll never get in there." And they all arrive at training at the beginning of the season. It's like, oh God, he's bought him.
There were many players like Stepanov's actually that Wenger signed for £1 million from here and there.
Yeah.
and loads of them didn't come through.
Yeah, but that's, I think that's
Colo Touré was probably, I think Colo was the one. And once Colo had come through from really for 250 grand or something, everyone thought, this guy's a genius. How's he found him? I mean, Patrick Vieira was the best signing ever, but he was signed from AC Milan. It wasn't a secret.
Yeah. Well, actually, on the subject of Vieira, and I know Arteta's doing really well. I mean, I know Palace... Did Palace win? They got a draw, didn't they, the Emirates? Yeah, but they probably could have won.
Yeah, they got a draw. I was at that one.
I didn't want to say that, but yeah.
Yeah, they just went to pieces in injury time.
Is he someone you look towards as a possible future Arsenal man? Yeah. Would he be the dream ticket?
Yeah, he would. As soon as he became a manager. He's revered. He's adored and revered.
Yeah.
And he's a fine man. He's a brutal, ferocious fighter, but he's a warm and wonderful human being. I was talking to our mutual friend Kevin Day about him, and he said they immediately all love him.
Yeah, straight away.
Yeah. And now they get the ball and keep it. You know, Roy Hodgson was a terrific manager, but he was very risk averse and cautious.
They look really good, Palace. You know what they've done? They're passing it around. They've made Benteke back how Benteke used to be. He's like a beast now. He's scoring a couple of goals going into the area, isn't it?
And they've only lost away at Liverpool and away at Chelsea. They're really doing incredibly well. So that when they came to our ground and Arteta was under a bit of pressure, and there's Vieira on the touchline, and the Arsenal fans are singing his name, and Palace outplayed Arsenal that night. Arsenal nicked a 95th minute equaliser. It was a bit embarrassing. And there were no Arsenal fans left to see it. I heard about it in the morning. But City have got their eye on Vieira as well, haven't they?
Isn't Guardiola's muttered about Vieira taking over from him? One day.
Well, if he carries on as he is at Palace, he won't be short of jobs, I'm sure.
No, absolutely. So, Vieira, Petit, Henri, the French connection, Pires, Spanish-French, Basque, basically, isn't he? Was that a kind of identity to the club at that time? Because, obviously, France won the World Cup in 98, and that was a very good time for you, and there was a sense in which, because of Wenger, obviously, that there was some sort of a French model, not literally a model, obviously, behind the way you were playing. did you associate with the French very strongly?
Well, we certainly supported them in the 98 World Cup once England had been knocked out in the most harrowing circumstances. It's hard to describe how good Vieira was. I mean, I know everyone remembers him, but when he made his debut, I think he was 19, and he came on as a sub against Sheffield Wednesday, and they knocked the back four could knock the ball into his feet. We watched them go long to Alan Smith and Niall Quinn for years, you know, and John Hartson. And they could knock it into his... He would demand it even if he had two players on him. He would shrug one off and run past the other one. His touch was immaculate. His passing was so crisp and clean. He covered the ground. He tackled everyone. We said, who is this guy? And he transformed the team overnight. And when they won the double in 98, the pass Vieira to Bergkamp was the single most common pass in the league. No one player passed to another player more often than that. It's a good stat, that one. No one player passed to another more often than Vieira passed to Bergkamp. And I did speak to Wenger about this in a Q&A thing. And I said, was that a deliberate ploy? And he said, no, football's not as robotic as that. He said that's organic. A team will always pass through its strongest points. And so Vieira's always available, always demands the ball. Bergkamp's always available, always demands the ball. So that's how that worked. And really, those two men, two of the greatest, if not the greatest, footballers I ever played for Arsenal, along, of course, with Henri. They were the dominant feature, and they meant that the ball was on the ground. The other thing that changed hugely was when we used to get... If you got a free kick inside the opposition half, then Tony Adams and Steve Bolden, everyone would go in the box, and it would just be chipped into the area. Now, when we got a free kick, Vieira would put his hand on the ball and tap it 3 yards to the nearest player, not waiting for the opposition to go back 10 yards. Just to keep that rhythm going again.
Yep.
And we could not understand that. We thought, this is a free kick. Get it in there.
No. Get in the mixer.
Outplay them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Get it in there. Mm-hmm. So that was a big change. Whether it was to do with him being French or not, I don't know. I think that he could have come from anywhere. I mean, he was Senegalese, actually, but Wenger would have signed him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had a plan, and not comparing them as peers, but we had a player called Stephen Nzonzi, who was a similar shape. He was very tall, but he was actually incredibly good with the ball and fantastic at winning the ball back. And when you've got a player like that, it just makes the whole thing seem so much easier, because they're forever breaking up the play and then being able to create it. Whereas traditionally, I think in English football, you break up the play.
You do one or the other.
And you give it to somebody else.
We've had a long sequence at Oldham of players whose job it is to break up things in front of the back hole and then give it to the bloke 2 yards away because they're no good at passing it. They're very one-dimensional, Oldham players, unfortunately.
And on the subject of the quick free kick, and that's disappeared from the game almost completely. It seems to me that when there's a free kick these days in a game, everybody stops and has a drink of water and has a wander around, and the referee's not happy that it needs to be taken in 30 seconds time rather than straight away. And I do feel that's a terrible shame, because people talk about game management and breaking up the game and all those things, but it's really tedious when you're watching it when people just stay down and there's all sorts of faffing about.
With those free kicks, they have to arrange that really high line, don't they, like 25 yards up the pitch with all the space in behind. And so
I think it's a good point that you make there, because when the pitches got good and it was easier to get a booking, and the ball was more on the ground and people were passing it around more, the way to stop a team then was little niggly fouls.
Yep.
The team I remember, I think I associate it with Jose Mourinho, but the team I remember doing it the most were Porto against Celtic in that UEFA Cup final, Porto won.
In Seville, wasn't it?
They were becoming so exasperated by the continual fouling and the going down and lying down and the breaking up of the game. And we saw it a few years later when Mourinho came to Chelsea and they played Arsenal in a League Cup final 2007, and Arsenal, Wenger played the kids and the kids got us to Wembley, so he left all the kids in. It was a big mistake. But we were a goal up. Theo Walcott's first ever goal for Arsenal. And then Drogba scored twice, and he always scored. And then they spent the last 10 minutes just pulling shirts, falling over, staying down. It became so frustrating. Two Arsenal players were sent off. There was a fight. But this was how they did it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you find it, I find as a supporter, I'm getting really, really wound up. So how the players must feel, it's just... it's unfathomable to me that somebody doesn't lamp somebody, because in the 70s that's what would have happened,
As you said earlier on, the idea that you've got 15 minutes of extra time to win a cup game and you don't try and win the bloody thing, you're just trying to contain and take your chance with penalties.
Arteta was the king of it, actually. Arteta, who the other day was saying, oh, maybe my players were naive when they didn't give the ball back to Watford when they had a player down, but they knew the player wasn't injured, so that was why they didn't do that. It was a family injury. But there was one better.
Got up, hadn't he, already? Yeah,
it was nothing wrong with him. And Pires used to
You are a doctor,
really well.
Aren't you? Of course, Alan.
only from 100 yards away. Once I get up close, I lose confidence.
That's a big stethoscope you've got there.
But if you touched Arteta, he would fall down. And then you'd get a free kick. And the refs have got to stop giving those. Just got to stop giving those when there's a little contact and they fall down.
But I believe wholeheartedly that players are told from a young age that a free kick is more valuable than carrying the ball. And I believe that when they go down and get a free kick, they get applauded for it. And so it becomes part of being a professional footballer. Don't be naive and think about yourself. Go down, because that means we're safe. We can't be conceding a goal when we've got a free kick.
And kids see that. True. Kids see that on Match of the Day, see that on the live games, and they do it in school games.
Now there's such an emphasis, again, it's come round again, on set pieces. Set pieces are the thing. David Moyes' West Ham team are fantastic, and one of the reasons they are is because they're so dangerous from set pieces.
Well, and you've scored two very similar corner goals in the last 3 weeks, haven't you? From that sort of standing on the line and then coming back out again set piece that you do. I think you're right. They are becoming.
Well, I think that there's a lot made about where they're all running around in the box, but the key to a corner is hitting a good corner. The reason why Rory Delap's throw-ins were so good was they were so flat. They just came in completely flat. Mm. So you really couldn't make any adjustment. He didn't lob them in. They came in like a missile. It was really an unusual technique. I don't know why he was the only one in the league who could do it. No one else. You'd think every team could have one.
You'd
of these
think throws, Oldham have they? A Oldham have a young left back who's apparently who's the, you know, our long throw merchant. And his, as you say, you know, Rory's ones would come in like 7 feet off the ground and keep going. Yeah. But our lad throws it straight up in the air, and sure enough, it comes down in the penalty area. But it's got, you know, it's got snow on it when it comes down.
And of course, there's no point in trying to deflect that.
No.
It's got no power at all.
No.
It's
no
using the pace on the ball.
Yeah, there's
because it's landing on the top of your head.
It's caught it.
I did use the pace on the ball. And that's why it dropped to my feet.
The pace on the ball is all provided by gravity. It's not provided by the throw at all.
Anyway, Alan, thank you so much for coming on. We've really loved having you on. And we hope you'll come back sometime soon.
And I wanted to during the summer, I suddenly found myself fielding all sorts of messages from people saying, you know, they just said you were quite a good batsman on Test Match Special. And I'm thinking, really? Who said that? Was it boycott? But no, it was you. I'm doing you from the band. So thanks for that.
Experience.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
And what I remember was it was dropping you hitting a ball to me. And I think it was the first ball of the game. We hadn't done any catching practice. I was standing around, not expecting it. And this ball came flying towards me and hit me in the chest.
That sounds exactly the same. Oh. Picking out the fielder off the first ball is exactly what I would do.
And Arthur Smith was fuming at me because he always wanted to get you out. And I threw the ball to the bowler and we ran out the guy at the non-striker's end who didn't face a ball and looked at me as if to say, well, thanks very much, I've come all the way down here on a Sunday, why would you do something as horrible as that? And I just actually apologised to
while we're doing things we've heard on the radio about ourselves from Alan, somebody said to me, and this is probably about 4 years ago, oh, Alan Davis mentioned you on the Jonathan Ross radio show this morning. I said, oh really, what did he say? And he said you're the laziest person that he's ever met.
I can't believe I said that.
Well, nor can I. I can't believe it.
Lazier than Mickey Hutton.
What context that would be.
I don't know.
I'll tell you what I thought before I go. I thought you were going to ask me about Klopp and Arteta. Well,
we still can.
and it was all very embarrassing when the managers lose their marbles over nothing, you know. Yeah. But Arteta, it just occurred to me that it was a real sense of humour failure. And all you need to say to Arteta is, this is the voice of the Mr. Ons. That's really, if you say that to him, the resemblance to Captain Scarlet will kick in. And he'll become very, very serious about something other than football.
Yeah, he's more like Captain Black. Check the eyes.
He is Captain, he's so Captain Black.
We'll perhaps talk about the relative merits of all the coloured captains from Spectrum next week.
From Spectrum.
But thank you so much to Alan Davis and obviously. Please recommend this podcast to anybody that you think might enjoy it. Send us a review, rate us, do any of those things, or even just send cash. Cash would be good.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.